What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Today, we are going to be diving into a conversation centered around like maintaining your weight loss. I'm going to say weight loss with like asterisks, you know, next to it, because I do think this podcast is applicable to, quite frankly, any and all the goals that you might be working towards, but I'm going to gear it a little bit more towards weight loss and speak about the weight loss side of things, because that is that's usually something that is on most people's minds as we finish the year and as we head into the new year. And as we sit here today, it's middle of December. We only have a few more weeks left of December. Heading into new year, usually new year's resolutions bring weight loss targets, weight loss goals for a handful of people, at least in my experience. And I think that can be great, you know, and I think new year's resolutions can be a good starting point for a lot of people. And the reason I want to talk about the things we're going to talk about today is because I think people have a hard time conceptualizing like what it takes to keep that weight loss off long term versus just focusing on achieving fat loss, achieving weight loss, again, or any other type of goal, building muscle, body recomposition. Like the actions to do that, yes, are things that you're likely going to do and maintain at a certain capacity going forward to maintain that progress. That's nothing, you know, earth-breaking there. So I do think a lot of people know that. But in my experience and in my kind of time working with clients and even with my own personal, you know, health, fitness goals, the physique pursuits that I've kind of put into the last few years or so, these are some things that I've noticed anecdotally has worked for me. I have a list of like 9 or 10 things here that I'm going to kind of dive into, but these are things that I want people to start thinking about before they start trying to going into a fat loss phase, or before they start implementing something like a pre-fat loss checklist, which if I'm correct, I think I recorded a podcast on that this time last year, just like things that you should kind of keep in mind as you plan on cutting calories or as you plan on going into a fat loss phase. And I've just basic things. I'm talking about things like getting at least 30 to 40 grams of protein at meals, getting, you know, 6,000 to 7,000, 8,000 steps a day, depending on what your starting point is, lifting 3, maybe 4 times a week, or getting 4, you know, type of workouts in each week. Just kind of like cutting back on alcohol consumption, right? Like physically in bed for 7 to 9 hours per night. Just like a lot of things that are going to make fat loss a lot easier, right? Like those are habits, behaviors, things that you can adjust with your routine that can make a huge difference, especially as you cut calories and pursue fat loss. Now, when it comes to maintaining your weight loss long-term, again, a lot of those things are going to be staples and ideally, you know, part of your habitual routine going forward. But there are some other kind of nuances and caveats and things that I think could be helpful to kind of wrap your head around and think about before you go in, as you are doing the thing, and then as you're done with this. Because far too many times people just think about the dieting phase, right? They think about what it's going to look like. They think about their fasting window. They think about what foods they're going to cut out. They think about how much they're going to track, or what their macronutrient percentage is, or how many days a week they're lifting. Like all things that can be good and can be great and can elicit fat loss. But far too many times people fail to plan or prepare or envision what the diet after the dieting phase looks like. And that's where the magic happens, right? Like that's where we keep the weight loss. That's where we keep, you know, your body composition. That's where we keep, you know, what your physique and what your health status is over the long term. And unfortunately, if we look at our weight loss retention statistics that we have, which quite frankly aren't super accurate, a lot of people will say and throw out numbers like 95% of people who lose weight will just regain the weight back. Like I think everybody has probably heard that number. That is a very loose, lazy kind of statistic that I don't think paints a full picture and I don't think is 100% correct. I would say maybe like that 80 to 95% like could be a starting point or a generalization of like, yeah, you know what? A lot of people who do lose a significant amount of weight will regain that weight or some of that weight back within a 6 month to a year up to 5 year stretch after that. And that's really what we're trying to get here, right? Like that's the part of this equation that we're really trying to attack, because it's what happens after after that dieting phase that really makes a difference and will help you maintain the cool shit that you saw during your fat loss phase or whatever, you know, again, whatever phase you're going through right now, will maintain that long term. Okay. I feel like this podcast is fitting because I don't think I've necessarily talked about some of these things together on a podcast. Obviously, the stuff that you're going to hear from me isn't super new, but this is a good time of the year where it's before New Year's Eve. There is a lot of, I think, practice and things to be mindful of as we finish the year. Because quite frankly, like this is the time of the year where people aren't super committed, aren't super, you know, dialed in. And not that you have to be, right? But aren't really on top of their shit and they're really loose with things. And, you know, it's really from like October to December that people can put on 2 to 4 pounds and they could do that year after year after year. And 10 years go by and, you know, you kind of have these years that are super inconsistent. You're only adherent to your shit 50% of the time. And that's how people gain, you know, an extra unwanted 20, 30, 40 plus pounds over, you know, a 5-year stretch or a 10 year stretch or more. And so, and again, there's no perfect numbers here or anything. And you might be somebody who's just sitting, you know, what, 10, 15 pounds above what your quote unquote ideal weight might be or what your goal weight might be. Like, this stuff is applicable to you just as much as the person who maybe has 150 pounds to lose. But if we look at the weight loss retention statistics, they're just garbage, man. And there's a lot of things that I think factor into that. But the good news is that the people who are successful, the people who do maintain their progress, the people who do lose weight and keep that shit off over time, like there's a lot of habits, behaviors, and things that they do consistently that make it more effortlessly, right? Like make it more possible for them to live happy, healthy lives where they're not just thinking about pursuing fat loss every single year. Because ideally, you know, if you're somebody who is thinking back the last 2, 3, 4 years and every year one of your goals is to lose X amount of weight or to just go and pursue weight loss, a lot of people can kind of relate to that. Like I think on average, I think the average person tries or thinks about losing weight like 1 to 4 or 5 times a year, which is alarming, right? Like people are thinking about weight loss year round and the implementation or the action or the adherence to them actually losing weight is a different part of this equation, right? And different piece of this puzzle that people are also having a hard time with. But the thought and the desire and the want to lose weight is part, it's just partly built into people's mindsets and their habits and what they want. And it's something that people can think for decades about, right? And I just see people go through that. And a lot of the people that I work with have had some experience with that. And I think that when we do things the right way, or when we do things differently, or when you start to realize that there are a lot of different inputs and a lot of different habits and a lot of different things that maybe you're not accounting for right now, that can really help you, you know, maybe we're not, preventing every ounce of weight gain from happening after you lose weight. Like that's not something I'm guaranteeing here, but like you getting down to a weight or a range or losing 5 or 10% of your body weight and keeping that off, like that's where a lot of these benefits come from. And that's where I want us to kind of appreciate like what these things are going to do for us as we continue to, you know, push past that, if that's what you want, right? Or try to get leaner or try to build more muscle. Like a lot of these things are going to help with any pursuit that you put your mind to. So long story short, I wanted to talk about a handful of things that I'm talking about to my clients, things that I've seen and that I've communicated with clients in the past, things that I've implemented personally, and things that I want you to start to wrap your brain around of what you could and should be doing or thinking about or implementing as you go through your, you know, New Year's resolutions checklist and you go through the goals and all the things that you're wanting. Like, how are we going to make it different this time, right? Like, how are we going to structure things to make it easier to adhere to and build that into our new lifestyle and preferences going forward? You know, it's none of this is as simple as like, yeah, I'm just going to go keto and fast for, you know, 20 hours a day and just eat 4 hours a day. And like, that's going to get me to where I want to be. Like, yeah, again, that can help you lose weight, but the likelihood of that being something that you do indefinitely, you doing forever, it's just really low for a lot of people. Okay. So these are more practical things that I find that aside from helping you lose weight, they're the things that are going to help you keep that weight off long-term. So the first one I have here is a lot of people who keep the weight off long term, or who maintain a healthy physique or a healthy body weight over the long term, they are mindful about their portion sizes. Now, whether you're tracking or not, whether you're really thinking about it all the time or not, like, people who are mindful about their portion sizes and how much they're eating and, you know, what comes from the different foods that they're eating, like, they are usually going to be at an advantage when it comes to estimating how much they're eating for the day, or understanding like how much it means to eat for their energy demands, or to eat for fat loss, or to eat in a small surplus so you can start, you know, building muscle more efficiently, or whatever it is. But most people who have a basic understanding about portion sizes are going to find a lot more success with their, you know, with their weight loss efforts in the moment and keeping that weight off long term. Now, this is not a sales pitch necessarily to people track their food and download MyFitnessPal or whatever tracking app, and to do that now and forever and, you know, not learning how to live without that. Like, that's not what this is about. And I would sit here and argue that doing that for a period of time, like tracking food, getting a kitchen scale, weighing out what 35 grams of your tortilla chips look like at night, like those are things that you do a couple times, you do a few times, and you just have a better basic understanding of how much you're actually eating. Because far too many times, you know, we go through our days, we go through our weeks, and especially in this season of our life, and it's like, all the little things add up. And this time of the year, we're exposed to a lot of shit, right? Just food or snacks or, you know, treats and desserts and stuff brought to work or at your kid's school, or going to, you know, family gatherings, or going to brunch on the weekend, or, you know, making cookies for Santa, right? And like going to more evening parties, or, you know, meeting up with friends, or going to happy hour, like all of these things, like, when you look at your, you know, total week and you look at the opportunity that you have to eat things, and if you have no idea how much or what you're putting into your mouth every single day, like, the likelihood of you overconsuming calories over time is going to be higher compared to somebody who is maybe better at budgeting how much they're eating. Maybe they're doing a little bit more prep work and they're eating more meals made from home to account for some of the higher calorie days. Or maybe they're budgeting like, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm going to eat a little bit less these next few days, knowing that I have my work Christmas holiday party and I get blacked out and it's an all-you-can-eat buffet and Tammy's making her famous, you know, fucking cheesecake that night. It's like, yeah, I know I'm probably going to eat 3,500 calories that night. So maybe I budget my week out, or maybe I reduce the portion sizes of things that I'm doing around that event to kind of average things out a little bit more, right? And when it comes to weight loss, like, the same rules apply, right? Like, we want to be in a deficit, or if you're trying to maintain your weight and we want to be at maintenance, like, understanding how much you're eating and what the portion sizes of certain things, like, that is going to be a huge advantage for you going forward, whether or not you track over the long term. But you being able to look at, you know, a scoop of ice cream and being like, oh yeah, like, I know that's probably one portion, that's probably 280 calories. Me, my normal tendency is to eat three scoops of that, you know, and I could hammer 1,000 calories before I even add fudge or, you know, Oreos or whatever else, you know, on top of those things. It's like, people can just do a better job in the moment, like, keeping track of maybe how much they're eating or what the portions are of the stuff that they're eating. And that could be helpful for them going forward. And it's not even only just about restricting or managing calories. A lot of it could also be like, yeah, I have a basic understanding of when I go to a restaurant and I see a chicken breast on a salad. It's like, oh yeah, you know what? That's probably 3.5 ounces of, you know, chicken right there. And understanding like how much you're getting, like how many servings of fruits and vegetables, how, you know, how much protein you're consuming day to day, like how much water you're drinking. It's like, you can use portion sizes to kind of create a little checklist in your brain to, you know, keep kind of crossing off throughout the course of the day. It's like, oh yeah, you know what? I had three meals with a decent, you know, size protein source at each meal, or a protein source at each meal. So I probably got 100 grams of protein per day. And, you know, that same person might notice them feeling different or feeling hungrier or not feeling as satiated after meals or just feeling shittier if they have like 60 grams of protein that day, right? So not saying people are going to be perfect every day, but the more in tune you are with how much you're eating or what portion sizes look like those are going to be really valuable tools that you can lean on in the future when food tracking isn't something you're doing consistently, right? Or when you find yourself in the infinite amount of social situations that, you know, you're going to find yourself in going forward, or even just with your daily meal prep routine and everything else you've got going on, like understanding how much you need. It's like, oh yeah, I know, like in order to hit 25, 30 grams of fiber, it's like, I need a whole fucking container of raspberries instead of two or three or four that I'm putting in my smoothie, right? It's like, that's the kind of stuff that can just help be reassuring. And again, not to say you have to track forever, but that could be a good opportunity to track and measure food and just to see what's going on. With that, the second point I wrote down here was, a lot of people who keep the weight off long-term or who find success long-term do some form of meal prepping or food planning for the week. That is one of the things that help keep people on track and reduce the amount of times they're eating away from home and help them stick to, you know, a lot of the eating patterns, behaviors, the things that, you know, they have more control over that are going to be more conducive to them getting their goals and maintaining their goals long-term. And I'm not sitting here again saying that you got to go get the same fucking chicken breast and frozen broccoli and minute rice packets and eat that shit 5 days a week for lunch and dinner. That's just, I don't think that's a good plan either. But the people who do really well have some form of structure for their eating for the week. They have some form of maybe accountability source. They have some form of familiarity or repeatability with a lot of the recipes, the meals, the foods, the stuff that they'll find in their refrigerator or the things that they add to their grocery list. You know, one thing that I'm a huge fan of, and if and when people need it when we're doing coaching, is we kind of talk about this plan, purchase, and prep method, which is plan when it comes to meal prepping or prepping food for the week. The plan is like, hey, let's write out what we're going to have. Like, let's anticipate what we're going to do for breakfast, right? Let's look at what your schedule looks like. Let's look at what days you have dinner events or not. Like, let's look at, you know, what opportunities we have to bring lunches to work each day, or what we're going to cook with the wife or by yourself for dinner, or what you're going to cook with the kids. Like, let's plan out your menu in advance for the week. And once you have those things down, that's when you can at least look in your pantry, look in your fridge, look in your freezer, look at all the shit that you have and see what you have and what ingredients are missing, so that when you create your grocery list for the week, you have an idea and you have the food and you're not over purchasing or throwing away your fucking spinach bag every single week and wasting a ton of money because you're actually planning and you know when you're going to use some of these things, right? So being able to plan in advance, write your grocery list based off the things that you need to fill in the gaps between what you have and what you don't, purchasing that shit, going to your grocery store or grocery stores or going to your Costco run and hitting up Trader Joe's. And once you get that done, like planning a time to prep that food. And I'm not talking about you spending all 10 hours of your day meal prepping on Sunday. Like some people might do that, you know, kudos to you. But for a lot of people, 1 to 2 hours, you know, once or twice a week can be life-changing for people, right? And might sound like a big commitment, might sound like a lot if that's not something you're doing consistently right now, but those 1 to 4 hours that you plan prepping and you cook and you, you know, plan in advance for the week are going to save you 5 to 10 hours of decision-making and money and you going and getting stuff or waiting for Grubhub to deliver dinner tonight because you didn't have your shit together. So doing some form of like meal prep and having food available, it's going to reduce decision fatigue, right? Because you have shit planned out for the week. It's going to likely reduce or help you kind of control the amount of food, the amount of calories that you're eating per week, because you're going to have a better chance of, you know, eating and eating in alignment with how many calories or how much food you're trying to eat at that moment. Because if you make your meals for the day and you compare that to one lunch away from one lunch away from home with the coworkers, you guys go to PF Chang's, it's like, it's pretty fucking easy to have 1900 calories in that single lunch versus you making 1900 calories for your meals for the day. And as simple as, you know, as it could be, is just tracking and getting to a place where you're planning what meals you're eating for the week and making that a priority. But most people who do that really do a good job of managing and maintaining a lot of the success that they see after they lose a significant amount of weight. And this also could look like people maybe purchasing or investing into a meal prep company. Like, that's not something that's off limits. Like, you know, I know a lot of people that do the factory meals, or you might have a local meal prep company that delivers to your, you know, doorstep once a week, or you can order the, you know, tier three, tier two, or tier one. So it's like, yeah, maybe you get two or three meals a week, or maybe you get breakfast and lunches delivered and you have that ready to go from your local meal prep company, and that fits into your budget. And that's something that makes sense for you. And that, you know, maybe that expense is something that gives you a huge return on your investment, because you're not somebody who has 4 hours to cook, you know, all your food on a Sunday, for example. So there are opportunities to be more efficient with this if you have the money, the resources, and the interest in doing so. But again, I do think a lot of people just learning the basics of like planning their menu for the week, going and shopping and getting food that, you know, covers in the gaps or helps you, you know, get all the ingredients you need to execute on those meals, on the breakfast, the lunches, the dinners. And you actually doing that, like, you're going to have a higher likelihood that you eat all that food throughout the course of the week, and you deviate less away from the plan because you have your shit kind of ironed out for the week, and you don't have to just be, you know, caught between always deciding what you want to eat for the night versus like what you have available to you at home. So I do think that some form of meal prepping, meal planning, just future forecasting your nutrition, your food selection for the week, what is available to you, what snacks you have, what fruits or vegetables or raw vegetables or things that you have on hand. So when you do get hungry and you're eating off, you know, what maybe what your plan was for the week, like all these things could just make it easier for you to get your nutrients, get your fiber, get your protein, meet your calories for the week, and also help you maintain kind of the success that you see long term. So most people who do that also see success over, you know, the next year to 10 years, because they have these systems in place that keep them on track a little bit better. Third point here is kind of tying back into the second one, but most people are, they cook a decent amount at home. And again, this is going to look different for everybody, but people who never cook any meals at home, like if you show me a person that does that, it's like, I'll maybe also show you a person that spends a ton of money or unnecessary money on food, right? Like if you imagine you're paying $15, $16 for just a single Chipotle bowl tonight, you know, and you could theoretically go get all those ingredients and make five bowls for meal prep for the week with very similar, if not the same exact ingredients for $20 or $25 for the week. It's like, yeah, there's opportunity costs, right? And there's things that you can definitely, just maximize your spending and save your time and calories too. Not to mention like the calories you might get from Chipotle might differ and will likely differ from the calories and the food that you make at home, and maybe ingredients and toppings and things are going to be a little more simple. And again, portion controlled, right? Because you can go to MyFitnessPal and search the Chipotle app and, or the restaurant, and go through their, you know, little online menu and estimate that you had, you know, 1100 calories because you entered the guac, the cheese, the chicken and the queso that you had on it, and maybe some sour cream and the salsas and whatever it is. And when you itemize all those things out, that, you know, app might give you an idea of how many calories that are. But quite frankly, man, I don't know about you, but every time I go to Chipotle, every time I go to a restaurant, like sometimes the portions are different, right? And like, Johnny behind the fucking counter isn't giving you a perfect, you know, 4 ounce portion of chicken every time you go in there, right? Or giving you a perfect, you know, 50 gram, you know, little dab of sour cream. Like he might be giving you 150 calories for all we know. But moral of the story is like doing some cooking at home and doing a lot of your cooking at home throughout the course of the week can save on a lot of empty calories. And again, teach you about portions, teach you how to meal prep, learn about the ingredients, can help you kind of like experiment with different recipes and adding different things to your rotations throughout the course of the week. So you're not just doing the same shit all the time and you get super bored of that. Like cooking from home can help you save on so many things that the people who really make that a priority and who do that well consistently over time are going to find more success and find this shit a lot easier than them always eating away from home or eating away from home 5, 6, 7 meals a week at least. And, you know, realizing that the calories, the cost, you know, the time, how you feel, like a lot of times when you order food and you order takeout or whatever it is, like maybe you're not always getting the best food that you could be getting. And all those things can factor into how you feel and how much you're eating and just, you know, what you're doing throughout the course of the week. So cooking from home is a big one. Number four I have on my list here is people who keep their weight off long-term or who can maintain their success long-term, monitor their progress consistently, right? And I'm not talking about being overly neurotic and, you know, meticulous about every single daily weigh-in and measuring under the perfect conditions all the time and freaking out if the scale's a little bit higher. Like, of course, monitoring progress can be taken to the extreme sometimes, but for people who are trying to maintain what progress they made for 3 months beyond that, right? A year, 2 years, 5 years and beyond, weighing for somebody might be really helpful for them to assess how things are going, right? And if somebody notices over a 2-3 month stretch that they've gained 4 or 5 pounds, you know, there might be a good chance that they're in a small surplus or they're unaccounting for things. And that could be something that helps them recalibrate their efforts, right? Helps them be honest with themselves. It's an objective data point that people can look at and use that to make a different decision going forward. And I got to say, scale is not the only one. It's not the biggest one, but it is one that I find that a lot of people can use when they use it in a good headspace, when they use it with the intention of just tracking trends over time. Having some sort of scale neutrality can be the thing that just makes that process a lot easier. And, you know, that is something I think people can get to on their own, but, you know, working with a coach or working with your therapist or working with people who can kind of help you use a scale in a way that's more productive than destructive, I think could be really helpful. But, you know, when it comes to monitoring progress, scale, stepping on a body weight scale might be the most accessible and easy one that a lot of people can do if they want. Photos, measurements, how your clothes fit, right? Like, those are all things that kind of objectively, like, you can look at and you can see it's like, oh, you know what? Maybe my clothes are fitting a little bit tighter. I'm not weighing myself, but maybe these pants or this dress or this thing feels a little bit tighter. And you know what? Maybe that's something where you're not beating yourself up, but you're just acknowledging the fact that, yeah, you know what? Like, maybe things have changed a little bit and maybe I need to exert some more effort or pay more attention or try and do things a little bit differently to prevent this from continuing, right? Or maybe getting back to a place that you once were. So monitoring progress one way or another, I think, can be really helpful. I'm a big believer also in just like tracking workouts and, you know, from the, from like a habit checklist and, non-objective markers that you can maybe track throughout the course of the week, like steps, right? How many steps did you get on average or each day? How many lifts did you get? How much are you lifting? What reps and how much weight are you lifting on those, you know, on those movements that you're doing? You know, again, I mentioned body weight measurements, but like other like habit related things, like, hey, checklist of like, I had 3 vegetables throughout the course of the day, right? Like, or I had 3 protein sources and they were all different. And that was my target for the day was, you know, hitting steps and getting 3 protein sources in each day. Like, there's a lot of ways that you can tailor it to you and your individual needs, but having some sort of checklist or having some sort of like objective piece of data or visualization or things that you're checking in with yourself throughout the course of the week can help you kind of stay on track. And it's not that like, it's not that you always need to have goals and you always need to be, you know, hyper observing all of this stuff. But, you know, I do think that when you do some sort of, you know, measurement tracking or you do some sort of tracking of these, you know, these markers over time. And again, it could be blood work as well, or it could be like health markers, things like that, A1C, whatever it is, maybe that's more pertinent to you and your situation. But being able to track that over time can just give you kind of a report card on how things are going. And again, if you need to change anything or just keep things the same, because you might find that, hey, yeah, you know what? My weight's about the same. My clothes are fitting the same. I feel really good in the gym. I'm getting stronger. You know, my blood work, I got it checked, you know, 6 months or every year and everything's good or trending in the right direction. Like, that could all be really good data points for somebody to justify why they should keep doing the things that they've been doing. Okay. So I think there's a lot to be learned from that. And I think there's a lot of action to be taken based on things that you're seeing and observing and measuring over time. So for the people who are interested in like maintaining progress, I think that measuring the stuff that's important to you can and should be part of that process as well. awesome. Number five here, a little bit more of like a habit-based type of thing, but people who implement just like consistent daily routines. It's not that you have to do the same thing every single day, but having an idea of what a good day looks like or what a perfect day or an ideal day looks like for somebody and them following that could be extremely helpful. And again, there's a million examples of this, but for somebody that might look like, yeah, you know what? I wake up around this time every morning, or I wake up and I don't hit snooze, or I wake up and I drink my 20 ounces of water first thing in the morning that I put in my room or on my nightstand. So that's the first thing I do in the morning, right? Or maybe for somebody, it's like, you know what? My routine starts when, from a nutrition standpoint, when I get to work and, you know, I have my meal prep or my smoothie that I made the night before the morning of, and I start eating then or drinking then. Or maybe another person might be like, yeah, you know what? My fasting window is only from noon to 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. And you have your meal prep, you know, you did your plan purchase prep method, and you're mindful about your portion sizes, and you weighed your food for a period of time, so you know how much protein you're getting with your first meal of the day. And you know, you have a fiber source and a protein source and maybe a carb source or some other snacks. And it's like, yeah, you have all that shit ready to go. So when it comes to your daily routine, you know, you eat around noon, like that's something that you can repeat and be consistent with over time and have some familiarity with going forward. So again, it doesn't only necessarily have to be with food or your exercise, you know, or when or what you drink throughout the course of the day. But things like stress management and, you know, reading or journaling or anything that kind of pertains to like stress management, sleep is a big one, morning, nighttime routines, a lot of stuff that comes with like being a healthier person, like going for walks or getting some sort of activity in or just having some structure throughout the course of the week. Again, it's not a day by day thing, but it's like, yeah, you know what? Monday night we have this sporting event at night, and Tuesday I go lift in the morning, and then Wednesday, I go to my kid's soccer practice, but then after that we go on a walk after dinner, and then Thursday, you know, we play pickleball in the evening, and Friday, then I get my another lift in, and then Saturday I get my last lift in for the day. It's like you can have predictable schedules each week. It doesn't have to look identical every single day, but implementing those consistent kind of daily routines and going on walks when you normally do, eating around the same times you normally do, like building some repeatability with that can do wonders for people instead of having every day be this fuck show of like, what's going to happen today? Or this morning you woke up late and you rushed out the door and you had to stop by Starbucks and you got a scone and a coffee and you forgot your lunch because you were so rushed. And then you had to get takeout or got Chick-fil-A. And then the next day you wake up really early and you get your workout in. And then the next day you're so tired because you don't normally work out, but you felt guilty for doing that the next day. And then you wake up and it's like, oh fuck, I don't have anything planned for breakfast. And you know, you can see how the inconsistency can kind of cause chaos throughout the course of the day. It can make it harder to implement those health promoting behaviors and decisions that you're making throughout the course of the day. So building some consistency and building a routine around some of this stuff could be really helpful from an activity, a sleep, stress management, activity, right? Exercise, going for lifts, getting in your workout classes, taking the dog on a walk, taking your kids to their shit. Like there's a ton of things that you can build some routine around, and building in other health seeking, health promoting behaviors around the stuff that you're already doing could be really helpful and advantageous for people. So I find that a lot of people who have some structure and who have a lot of their shit figured out and kind of know what their next 3 days are going to look like already, whether you're actually scheduling that in your, you know, schedule for the day, or you have an idea of how that day is going to go beforehand, that can really help people over the long term as well. Awesome. Six on here that I have is people who are successful over the long term have some form of accountability or belong to a group or have some other source of motivation that's just beyond themselves, right? Maybe it's a supportive partner. Maybe it's a workout buddy. Maybe it is you going to a workout class. Maybe it is you going to the grocery store and seeing your favorite teller, or not teller, but, you know, bagger, whoever it is, right? That's kind of a weird example, but maybe it's you belonging to a church or other organization or groups, or maybe it's you joining a city league team. Maybe it's you looking for a different gym that meets certain criteria that make it more likely for you to feel included in kind of a group. Maybe it's you joining Facebook groups. Maybe it's you following accounts on Instagram that motivate you or support you or help you be better, right? And all of these things, I think together, could be really helpful for somebody who might feel like they're doing this shit alone all the time. Because, man, if we're being real, like, we're all on our own little path and our own journey. And even though we might have a supportive partner, or mom or dad or kid or, you know, best friend, like, they're not the ones doing all this shit for you, right? And sometimes this road can be kind of lonely. You know, maybe the people closest to you aren't doing the same exact things of you, and they could be somebody and people that you can confide in and trust and all that stuff. But man, at the end of the day, having like-minded people you surround yourself with, having, you know, other people that are kind of supporting you, cheerleaders, maybe you hire a coach or a therapist, or you have a good PCP or whatever the case may be, like, asking for help, you know, like, embracing the community aspect that can come from, like, things related to health and fitness, and not feeling like you're just doing this alone all the time, I think could be so powerful and something that is just very motivating going forward. So you're not only trying to tap into your discipline muscle every single time and every single week and every single day. And I think that the likelihood of you showing up and enjoying this process more over time is going to be better. I mean, because at the end of the day, we're all humans, right? Like, we all crave this sense of belongingness to some type of group or community, and we thrive when we feel that way. So kind of creating a circle, creating an environment, like asking for help or having conversations with your partner if they aren't supportive or if they haven't been helpful or if you need more from them, like have the trust in yourself and your partner that, like, they're going to change for you or in with you, and, you know, maybe their life's going to benefit because of it. But man, if you're not getting something from a group or people and you know they're capable of giving that to you, like, don't be afraid to fucking ask them for it, okay? Because it's not fair to have other people try and guessing your expectations all the time. Like, sometimes you need to ask for what you need. And, you know, chances are a lot of people have a lot of good support networks and systems and people around them right now, but maybe asking for something different or more, or actually asking them for what you need instead of them thinking they're giving you what you, you know, think you need. Like, I think there's room for improvement even within the circles and the communities that you have now. So a lot of opportunity, but just this sense of, like, support groups or communities or the sense of belongingness, like, that alone, from, like, motivation and from an accountability standpoint, can do wonders for people over the long term. So keep that in mind. Number eight I have on here, I actually just skipped seven. One of the things I wrote down was, you know, having some support, family, healthcare providers, other things. Like, we kind of talked about that with that previous bullet point, but really, when it comes to surrounding yourself with like-minded people, like, that is going to be the thing that dictates a lot of people's success over the long term. Like, if we look at your environment, we look at the people you surround yourself with, like, everyone's heard the cliche saying of, like, you're the average of the five people you hang out with most, but that's so fucking true. You know, it's like, man, you hang out with, if you compare who you hung out with when you were 19 years old and you were going to college for the first time, and you know, you were living away from home or on campus or in your sorority, and it's like, man, you know what? If the people you surrounded yourself with went out and binge drank every weekend and ate fast food every day and, you know, played video games all the time and didn't really work out or do a whole lot of stuff outside of, you know, what they were doing around the house, like, chances are you probably did similar things to them, maybe not to the extent other people did, but chances are, like, they influenced you to a certain extent where you kind of conform to what they were doing. And I think the opposite is true too, where it's like, if you think about a time in your life where you were surrounded by people who got you moving, encouraged you to walk, you know, were kind of the bug in your ear of, like, hey, did you, you know, get your water in for the day? Or do you want to go on a walk with me and the dog tonight? Or do you want to go and schedule that workout class for tomorrow? Or, you know, we have food at home and, you know, I think we might be better to just eat here and cook the food we planned we eat today instead of just ordering or stopping it, like, in and out on the way home. It's like, when you surround yourself with those types of people, like, you're going to find yourself making these decisions a hell of a lot easier on yourself when other people are doing it with you. Okay. And I think that you know who the people are in your life where you can lean on or lean less on, I guess you could say, in some of these situations, but really, really lean into those people that are going to help support you and who are going to help you and really want the best for you. And I think that you'll find that just all of those things together make everything that we've talked about today so much easier and so much more digestible for most people. Awesome. Eighth point I have here is a lot of people who lose weight are flexible and sorry, who lose weight and keep it off over time can be flexible with their goals, are always reassessing, have more individualized and personalized goals towards them, right? Like they're setting goals based off things that they want instead of setting goals based off what they think society wants or what societal norms are or what your partner wants, right? Like they kind of go through the process of like, what do I want? And why do I want that? And how is that going to make my life better? And am I willing to do some of the things it's going to take to get there? Like going through that process and being introspective for a minute and being honest with yourself and arriving at a goal or a destination that you picked for yourself. Like the people who do that and spend the time, you know, thinking about that and prioritizing that are going to be far more successful than the person who's like, oh yeah, I'm going to Cabo in 2 months and I know all the people around there are going to be in the bikinis and I want to look good in a bikini too. So I'm just going to go keto for the next 6 weeks or 7 weeks and just try and lose as much weight as possible so I could look good in the pictures that we post on Instagram. It's like, man, not to say that, you know, we can't have vanity-driven goals and want to look good for certain events. I think that can be part of it too. But again, it's like, how do we approach that? Why do we want those things? It's like, man, somebody saying that to themselves and wanting that outcome, them looking good in the first picture they take on the boat or whatever the fuck they're doing. It's like, just so they can fit in with other people or look better than their friends or look as good as what they think other people look like. Like that's going to be a losing battle for a lot of people. And that's not going to be motivation that people carry with them going forward. And it's not going to be a strong enough, like why, I guess you could say, for why you would keep doing and keep taking care of yourself long after that trip is over. So I don't know. I think that people that are really honest with themselves and that set goals that they want are one, going to be more likely to hit those goals, and two, are going to be better at reassessing and adjusting and modifying and reaching for new goals once they get to that point as well. Because this isn't a game where it's like, okay, once I lose 30 pounds, then great, life's good, I'm feeling better, and I don't have to think about anything ever again. It's like, no, you know what? Like when you lose that 30 pounds, if and when you lose that 30 pounds, like maybe there's a next goal weight after that. Maybe there's a phase where you want to start to get in the gym and lift more. Maybe there's a phase where you want to compete in a triathlon, right? Like maybe you want to do things differently than what, you know, you're doing when you got there. And people being flexible and not as rigid and just not married to the single goal that they set in the very beginning, like I think that could be very healthy and a very important process when it comes to goal setting and, you know, predicting or just projecting what you want for the next 3 months, 6 months, a year, 10 years of your life. And those goals, those preferences can change over time. Okay. All righty. Last couple here. The ninth one I wrote, I've already talked about, but just creating a regular gym schedule, activity schedule, play schedule, just like prioritizing activity, maybe outside of the gym throughout the course of the week. Super important. Yes, you can technically be a healthy person by working out 2 days a week and maybe getting 7,000 steps in a day and controlling your calories. And, you know, people can live happily ever after doing that. But man, I think having things outside the gym, I think playing, I think participating in sports, I think playing with your kids, like picking up new skills, like trying things new. Like I just don't want people's fitness to die in the gym. And again, it's not to say that just going to the gym and that's all you do is a bad thing, but man, I think there's so many other fun things that your body can do by you going to the gym, by you getting into shape, by you staying in shape, right? By you continuing to progress over time. And I think that having other outlets, other things, other fun stuff that you're looking forward to and ways to move your body outside of you going and, you know, deadlifting and doing some chest press and doing some glute bridge and then Bulgarians and doing some tricep extensions and then going home. Like I don't think that's the thing that people are living for. And that's not what we're meant to just always do necessarily. Like we're meant to go play. We're meant to go outside. We're meant to go swim. We're meant to go have fun. pick up new sports, play sports that we've already played, just enjoy all the cool shit that the gym allows us to do. And I think people who have a regular gym schedule is very important. We talked about building a schedule around some of this stuff, but who schedule in time to have play throughout the course of the week or throughout the course of the month. I know people have busy schedules, but even if it's one or two times a month, you go to the indoor pickleball facility and you play for 3 hours with your friends. Like, that's great. Like, I want more people to do that more often because I think it'll be more exciting from an activity standpoint and just make you more appreciative of what your body can do over time. The last but not least here, probably the most important one, and we've talked about identity change and stuff over time on the podcast, but I think one of the more important things that I want people to chew, swallow, digest, and interpret on their own time is like, how are you developing a new identity when you're going through this process? Going through the process of planning for your goals, like what you want, planning in creating a different identity as you're going through that process of you going into a fat loss phase for 12 weeks, how your identity changes once you get to that new body, that new, physique, that new mindset, hitting those new goals. Like, how does the identity of that person, you listening to this podcast, how does that identity look different from the person who started that journey? Chances are there's a fuck ton of different things that person has done to overcome and to implement and to create just kind of a new environment and routine and hanging around different people and, doing all the tactical shit we've talked about today. But like, the identity that you are creating throughout this whole process is going to be just as important, because the people who don't keep the weight off, the people who don't succeed long-term, and the people who get to a spot only to regain weight back or to get back to a place that they were not too long ago are the people who think that they could just get to a new spot and return back or do the old things that, kept them in that starting point, I guess we could say, and not actually change who they are as a person, change their priorities, change how they, look at things, change what they say yes and no to, change what their priorities are. Like, man, that needs to happen alongside all this shit for it to work. So I saved this point for the last one because I do think it's a good one to end on, and it's one that I want to reinforce and constantly just say out loud, because it can be scary and it can be intimidating, but it is something that's necessary, especially if you're somebody that wants to get to a spot and keeps progressing from there. Like, what you think today should not be the same thing, or should not be the same things that you think 5 years from now. Like, if you can look back a year ago, 3 months ago, 10 years ago, I know that was not chronological order there, but like, and you can look back and you're like, oh yeah, I think the same, I look the same, and the same level of smartness, and I have the same lifestyle. It's like, man, you're not growing. Like, full stop. Like, that's not somebody who's reaching their full potential, who's striving for more. And I think a lot of people, when they look back on their past selves, like, there's an opportunity to have some appreciation for how much you've grown and how your mindset has changed and what habits and priorities and things that you're implementing now that are different from, this time last year when you're in the holiday season. Like, the identity change that happens alongside all these other, physical transformations, mental transformations, are the things that keep people motivated going forward, that keeps them grounded, it keeps them in the same body and progressing towards an even better body going forward. But man, you got to lose all the shit that wasn't serving you and that hasn't been serving you. And you embracing that, as uncomfortable as it might be and as hard as it might be in the beginning, like, that's the shit that future you will thank you for. So I just wanted to kind of end on that note. I feel like we could talk about that for a long time, but you know what I'm talking about, and you know what you need to do and some of the mindsets, and you probably have an idea of some of the things that are likely holding you back now that you need to get over. And whether for somebody that's setting more boundaries or saying no to more things or not overextending yourself or seeing a therapist, or maybe it's hiring a coach, right? Or maybe it's changing your exercise modalities, or, maybe it's you getting out of the scarcity mindset with nutrition. Maybe it's you going to maintenance. Like, there's a lot of things that we could probably talk about that are barriers or obstacles from where you're at now, from where you want to be. But as you change, as you implement all this stuff, as you go for new goals, like these are the types of identity changes that need to happen alongside that for you to see that long-term success and not have it just be a temporary fucking pit stop and you just bouncing back and forth all the time. So I'll end the podcast on that note. If you made it this far, I always appreciate you. You know that. I'm excited to hopefully I have a couple guests coming on the rest of this month that I'm pumped about. And then a few in the new year that I'm trying to get on and schedule right now that I know are going to be fun for you guys. So stay tuned. A lot of good stuff coming up. But in the meantime, you know, just remember to take care of yourself and start to think about some of these things and think about the things you're doing well and how you can keep those, you know, keep those habits, behaviors up, and think about the things you're not doing as well and the stuff that you need to change or keep getting better at, especially as we finish this year and head into the new year and you have all these big goals, aspirations, stuff that, you know, you want to kind of work towards in 2025. So I'll stop talking. Until next time, remember to get the purpose, train with attention, think with confidence as you work towards your own nutrition and fitness goals. Hope you have a good one. Take care of yourself, and I'll see you on the next episode. Peace. Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.